right, ready, start, go. So, my name is Veerkrishna Goswami, and I'm empathic. Not really. I put together this seminar, which I've given in many places of the world. It's actually a week-long seminar, and it's about 4 hours, 2 to 3 hours a day. There's a beginning seminar, a medium seminar, an advanced seminar. We're just going to give you a basic introduction. And so if you learn the basic things we're going to teach today, you're going to be more empathic with people, able to actualize or realize your goals, be able to deal with devotees better, and eventually go back to Godhead. All those things in one seminar. So, we're going to talk about what empathy is, since it's called empathic communication. It's not emphatic communication. Emphatic means like angry or something like that, or pushy. But empathic means to have feelings for others, understanding their feelings and needs. These two things here. Feelings and needs. We're going to describe what feelings and needs are. It is not the same as sympathy. Sympathy is about yourself. I mean, let's give a demonstration. Okay. Who here wants to make believe that they're sick? Okay. So you're sick, you have a high fever and everything like that?
I'm real sick.
I feel real sorry for you. I'm feeling really sorry for you. I'm in pain. Does that help you?
I feel better now.
Really?
I've given you some of my sympathy.
That's sympathy. Empathy would be, how are you feeling? Are you feeling hot? Do you have a fever?
Yeah, really.
Do you have a need to rest?
Yeah.
So which of the two do you feel better with? The first response or the second response? I mean, when I said I feel sad for you, or versus how are you feeling?
Basically, how am I feeling?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not concerned about
it. Yeah, because when you are sympathetic with people, then it's about you. I know if I was in the hospital dying, and someone said, started crying, I feel so bad. I said, now you're making it worse. Not only do I feel bad, but you feel bad too. So at least one of us should feel good. But if someone tries to understand how I'm feeling, that makes me feel better. You know, are you in pain? And do you have a need for rest? Do you have a need for pain relief? That's more what empathy is. To understand someone's feelings and needs. And now we're going to describe what feelings and needs are. Of course, a feeling is something from the heart. It's I feel hot, I feel cold, I feel sad, I feel depressed. It's not a judgment like when we say, I feel that you're an idiot. That's not a feeling. That's coming from the mind. We're trying to understand something in the heart. And there's many different feelings. We have to learn the language of feelings. It's not only I feel good or bad, but there's millions and millions of different feelings. And some feelings are positive, some feelings are negative. But feelings are always triggered by needs that are either met or not met. Give you an example. If I have a need for sleep, how do I feel? Anybody?
Sleepy.
Sleepy, tired. Also grouchy. You know what grouchy is? No. Grouchy, to translate that into English, common English, means angry. Did you ever meet someone who had too little sleep and they were angry? Raise your hand. Did you ever meet someone who was hungry and was angry? So? I told an interesting story at the last class. I have one of my godbrothers who sometimes I need to borrow money from. So I wait until after he eats. I call him on the phone and I say, Maharaj, have you taken prasadam yet? And he says, no. And I said, I will call you back later. And if I ask, have you taken prasadam? And he says, yes. Then he knows I want to ask him for money. So, if you ask, can everyone hear me without that? I prefer not to use it. So if you want to ask someone for money, fill their belly first. That's the technique. Don't ask on an empty stomach. Okay? So needs are very much so. We have different categories of needs. All of us have needs. That may appear shocking to some of you, that we have needs. And needs are of material needs, physical needs, mental needs, psychological needs. And we have a list here of the different types of needs that all of us have. Now this seminar was put together utilizing the knowledge that we find in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's works, particularly the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, and also in the works of some modern psychologists who talk about need psychology. Bhaktivinoda Thakura in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita states that we have basic material human needs, we have mental needs, psychological needs, and spiritual needs. And all those needs have to be met in order to progress in spiritual life. If you're in extreme pain, it's very hard to chant Hare Krishna and concentrate, right? I gave the example the other day. Actually, it was about 2 weeks ago. Thank God my doctor's not here. I was having a terrible toothache. And eventually, it was very hard to read or do any spiritual activity. So eventually, I did something that I would never want to do. I prayed to Krishna to relieve me of the toothache. Because being a guru and sannyasi, you're very proud. You have no material desires, right? You're not supposed to pray to Krishna for anything but pure devotional service. But I slipped. Now, this is a confession for all of you. I slept and I said, my dear Krishna, please relieve me of the pain immediately. And he did it. By me taking some medicine. Anyway. It's not that Krishna came and took out the tooth or anything like that, but I took the medicine. So there's an example where the need for being free from pain was not met, and I wasn't able to execute my spiritual activities properly. So we have a need for food. There's basic needs, seven categories. We're going to go over this. Actually, let's start with seven, because that's the most basic. You see, physical needs. Food, air. What happens if you can't breathe? You die. You can't chant Hare Krishna unless you breathe. You die. Air, water. Water is second to air. And then food. And all these different physical needs. Comfort. The other day it was very cold, so I was too cold. So these are needs that all of us have. Even if you're a sannyasi, you have these needs. And if someone tells you that you don't have these needs, you shouldn't have these needs, they're actually trying to turn you into a cult member, a robot, a clone, or whatever you want to call it. So we have physical needs. Then, we'll go up the list. Of course, spiritual needs is not only Krishna consciousness, of course, that is the topmost, but we have needs for peace, we have needs to be able to think clearly. Then, here's a big one, interdependence. We have a need we're social animals. We have a need for friendship. We have a need for love. That's a bad word. Okay. Love. That means even people in the renounced order of life, like sannyasis and brahmacharis or whatever, they have a need for loving relationships. Prabhupada said in the Upadeshamrita, in the verse, Tadati pratigranati guyamakyati prichati, that we, our movement increases by the loving exchanges between devotees. Like giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing the mind in confidence, and hearing from others in confidence. These are the six symptoms of love that we need. It's a basic human need to have these six symptoms of love. Of course, how we express these things should be done appropriate in accordance with our ashram. Obviously, if you're a brahmachari, you don't fulfill your need for love by going up to a brahmacharini. That's highly inappropriate. I mean, it's a funny story about Tirupati, since one of our friends from Tirupati is here. I asked Ravati Raman, the temple president, why don't you have any brahmacharinis in the temple here? Because, you know, it's a big temple. And he said, because there wouldn't be any brahmacharis if we had brahmacharinis in the temple. Protecting the brahmacharis. Devotee care for the brahmacharis. So instead you have a strategy whereby you make friends with the other brahmacharis. I mean, there's different strategies you can employ to fulfill your needs that are in accordance with your ashram. Okay, so that's the interdependence. We have a need for play. Play means just doing some recreational activities. Like, for example, I used to play volleyball with the devotees every day. One day, I took all the devotees whitewater rafting. Does anyone know what whitewater rafting is? We went down rapids. That means a river. Like in the Ganges, up in the mountains, in the Himalayas. We went down rapids with devotees, like 15 devotees in each boat. And we Krishnized it. We had the person who was the captain was not a devotee. He had to tell us which side to row on. So we told him, when you row on the right side, it's Nittai. And you row on the left side, it's Gauranga. So for 3 or 4 hours, you were there too. He was chanting, Nittai, 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 Gauranga, Nittai, Gauranga, Nittai, Gauranga. And after the whole trip, he became a devotee. So that's play. You can Krishnize the play. So that's a basic human need. We have a need for integrity. I guess I better use the microphone. We're getting more people. Is that wireless microphone available? Oh, sorry. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Okay, that's better. We have a need for integrity, which basically means not being hypocrites. Practice what you preach. Like, you know, the word acharya means one who speaks nicely and acts nicely. So we have a need for integrity in that way, being truthful, being honest, fulfilling our vows and promises. We have a need for a celebration. That means not only when something good happens, but if something bad happens, like someone dies, you mourn for that person. You express your emotions. You have a need to express your emotions positively, negatively, whatever emotions you have is a basic human need. If you keep the emotions in, guess what happens? Can anyone guess? What? You get sick. There's some evidence, as far as cancer is concerned, that many people who have cancer have repressed anger. They're angry and it's focused inwards, and then it causes some problem like that. So therefore, we have a need to express our emotions when we feel them. And finally, there's a need for autonomy. Each and every one of us has a need to be an individual and make choices in life, rather than to be told what to do. Basic human need. And if these needs are not fulfilled, we are unhappy campers. That's, of course, an American expression. We will not be happy. We will not be able to be stable in Krishna consciousness. We will not be able to continue year after year after year and finally go back to home, back to Godhead. Very important. This is elaborated on by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He doesn't use this list of needs. I'm using this list, but he mentions both material and spiritual needs need to be fulfilled. So this is like self-empathy. Interesting. We're talking about looking within ourselves and seeing what are our needs and making practical, consistent strategies to fulfill these basic needs. Very important. Now, of course, dealing with empathy for others, we become aware of others' needs because everybody else has needs. No man is an island. No woman is an island. And we help people or facilitate people in understanding their needs. Okay, next chart. Can everyone see this or do we need to move it? I think you need to move it closer to the front. Thank you. Okay. So empathy means here we have self-empathy and here we have empathy for others. They're very much connected. You can't really disconnect them. So self-empathy means we observe whatever happened, our own feelings, basic feelings, and what needs we have that are connected with these feelings, either pleasant or unpleasant feelings. And then we develop a practical strategy to fulfill those needs. If I'm feeling hungry, I have a need for food. There's a basic one. And my strategy should be cook some prasadam, or go to the restaurant, or get a pizza pie or something like that. Okay? Or if you're feeling sad, you have a need for friendship and love. So you go to one of your god brothers or god sisters or god nephews or god forbid. Did anyone catch that? No. Anyway. Gotta be a little slower with the jokes. So, and you develop a strategy. You say, you know, I'd like to reveal my mind to you. Can I talk to you? Now this Guhyamakyati Prichati is so important in Krishna consciousness. Many of us don't have someone that we can reveal our mind to in confidence because we're afraid it's going to end up on the internet tomorrow. Right? Or end up in the GBC conference or something like that. But we need someone we can just say, Prabhu, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. Can you help me? So we need to develop these sorts of relationships. Okay, that's self-empathy. And empathy for others means we observe others, what's happening, and we try to guess the feelings of others. We don't tell people what they're feeling. When you're counseling people, it's a very bad idea to tell people what they're feeling. For example, if you're dealing with someone who's angry, and they're screaming and yelling, and you say to them, are you feeling angry? What happens at that point? They get angrier. So people, as I said, people have the need for autonomy, so they don't need to be told how they're feeling, but you can guess. Inside, communication doesn't have to be verbal. In fact, most communication between people is nonverbal. That means body language, and tone of voice. 85 to 90% of communication is nonverbal. Remember that next time you write an email. Especially a flaming email where you tell someone you don't like them. Before writing any email that has emotional content, you should wait 12 hours. Go to sleep, wake up the next morning, and decide whether or not to push the send key. Because it won't have a good result, most likely. Most communication should be face to face. Or at least tone of voice, telephone is a little bit better than email. Email is good for telling people, I'll meet you in a certain place, let's go to the seminar. Facts. Just basic facts. Okay? So, you try to understand the feelings of others. You don't have to say anything. It may be communicated with your eyes and someone's needs. And you can help them understand or develop a strategy for fulfilling those particular needs. And that's basically what empathy is. It's not a very hard thing to understand. Understanding first your own feelings and needs, and understanding other people's feelings and needs. Sometimes you can guess at it with other people, but not with the anger. You know, let's say if someone is crying, you can guess, are you feeling sad because you have a need for friendship? And someone will tell you yes or no, and they'll be happy that you're interested in finding out about them. So, now we're going to talk about what blocks communication. This is basically the system for communicating with yourself and communicating with others. But there are actually blocks of communication that we want to try to avoid. And we call these the four D's of discommunication. Pretty easy to remember. And we use number one, which is called diagnosis, quite a bit in the Krishna consciousness movement. We're going to do a demonstration on that in a second. So diagnosis means give the dog a bad name and kick him, or hang him, as Prabhupada said. So we have a very elevated philosophy with all sorts of diagnoses in it, and we apply those diagnoses to each other. Can anyone give me an example of a diagnosis or a label that we apply with each other? If you can't, I'll start. Yeah. You're a Maya. What? You blew. You're an idiot. Not you. I'm trying to not look at anyone when I say these things. You're less intelligent. What's another one?
Well, when we refer to people in general, so we say the karmis.
You're karmi. And what do we sometimes say about ladies? Less intelligent.
Mental.
What? Mental. Emotional. And as soon as you give someone a label, you don't deal with them as a person anymore. Because that label is not accurate. Because everyone is a dynamic entity. In other words, we're changing from moment to moment. We may do something that's stupid right now, but we are not stupid. You understand the difference? Sometimes we do things that are stupid, sometimes we do things that are intelligent. We're dynamic. But a label is a static label. And then you see the person in terms of that label. Even positive labels. Like, oh, he's a pure devotee. And then you don't deal with him as a person anymore. You don't deal with him as this feeling human being. Okay. So we're going to do a little demonstration to illustrate this now. I'll need two volunteers. Anybody? You want? Okay, we'll have to have two ladies then, because we don't want to do this with two men. Yeah, why don't you come up here? Another one? Any brave ladies? I'm a brave lady. You're a brave lady. Well, you don't have to do it. Yeah. Okay. So, Would you can put this on their foreheads? You know how we do this? You've seen it. Okay, don't let them see that. They can see the other one. Okay, put this on one of the ladies' foreheads. And don't tell her what it says. Is it going to stick? And put this on the other.
Yeah.
Don't let her see it. Okay, so everybody sees who they are? Okay, so I want you to have a conversation with each other right now. Look at the label and address each other in terms of the label. How would you preach to her?
It seems to me like you're very sad.
Oh, it does.
Yes. So I have a solution to help you become happy. Are you interested?
Well, yeah, please.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Please.
Okay. I would like to take your advice.
Oh, okay. Well, do you know what mantra is?
Yeah. You can tell me for sure more.
So she's trying to avoid her, and she's interested in what she has to say. That's basically what's happening.
Okay. You still want us to go on?
Yeah, that's enough, actually, because okay. They can't hear what you're saying. So one of them was a pure devotee, had a pure devotee label, which is pretty nice. And another one had the label demon on it. And so they were dealing with each other according to the labels. Which is very interesting. I'll tell you something interesting about ISKCON history. Many of you may not remember it, but many years ago, Srila Prabhupada left the planet in 1977. And when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, there were a number of people who were appointed to be gurus. And automatically everyone thought they were pure devotees, right? It was just like, pure devotees. And then later on, someone else got appointed to be a guru. It wasn't me, don't worry. And then one of the brahmacharis asked me, when did he get his pure devotee initiation? And I was thinking, if that such an initiation is available, I want to take that initiation. You have a pure devotee just by throwing some bananas in the fire. It'd be great. So we oftentimes see people according to their position, just like some of the, you know, here's sannyasi robes, all right, dhandabhats, Maharaj, give me your mercy. But if I was addressed any other way, no one would want my mercy. Right? So that's why it's good to be, like Prabhupada told the story about how someone would dress up as a sannyasi during the day and the householder at night. Because he wanted to collect money. That's what the sannyasi's cloth is for, collecting money, and also grains, gold, and everything like that. When I first became a sannyasi, I was told by someone that this is meant to protect you from the women. And I said, how can this protect me? It's not much, is it? But then later on I found it's made for donations, so I became very happy. So that's a basic human need I was demonstrating, a need for fun. We all have a need for fun and laughter. And I also have a lot of that in me. So diagnosis really disconnects ourselves when we're diagnosing other people or diagnosing people who are not in the Krishna consciousness movement. How should we see everybody else? We should see them as what?
Equal devotees.
Devotees. Maybe we see them either as remembering their devotees or forgetting their devotees. That's it. Jivara Swarupa Hoy Nitya Krishna Das. That's our eternal identity. It's everyone's eternal identity, whether you're in the Krishna Conscious Movement or not in the movement. So when we go out and preach on Sankirtan, we see everyone as a brother and sister, spiritual brother and spiritual sister. We just have to remind them they have amnesia. There are no karmis out there. Remember that. They're acting as a karma, but they are not karmis. They are not vikarmis. They are not demons. As long as we think that they're demons, vikarmis, whatever, we will never be able to connect to them. Because really what brings people into the Krishna consciousness movement, apart from the philosophy and prasadam and everything like that, is social networking. There's been studies, scientific, sociological studies about why people join religious societies. And basically, in the West at least, it's social networking, friends. I mean, how many of us experience that one person joins out of a group of friends and then the rest join? Very, very common. I remember the first time I went to a Krishna conscious temple, I never wanted to join after that. Because they weren't friendly. They put me in the basement. It was the centigrade, it was about 10 degrees. In the middle of the winter in Boston, Massachusetts. And what happened is they woke me up early in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, not understanding my own needs. And then I asked, where is the bathroom? And they showed me the toilet, you know, but without a seat on it. And for someone from America, that's shocking. So anyway, and then they pushed me up into the temple room, and they didn't treat me empathically. All I saw was something that was very shocking for me. People jumping up and down in front of the deities. I didn't understand what it was. And people running around a bush. What was that bush? Anyone know what that bush was? Kelsey Daisy. And they were bowing down to a bush. I thought I had gone into some movie. Like, any of you seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? No, none of you seen that. I thought it was in a horror story or something like that. So basically it took me 3 more years to join the Hare Krishna movement because of that lack of empathy that I was experiencing, lack of compassion, lack of understanding. And the person who gave me that understanding, empathy, was His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. If it wasn't for Prabhupada, I'd still be out there doing whatever I was doing before. Probably be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever. Thank God for Prabhupada. I met Prabhupada in 1971, and as soon as I saw Prabhupada, I could experience the empathy, compassion, and love that was emanating from Srila Prabhupada's presence. Anybody here who was with Srila Prabhupada, I'm sure you experienced that too. That was the initial impression. It was like going back to Godhead, just to be in the same room as Srila Prabhupada. So then I did things I never wanted to do, like shaving my head, wearing bed sheets. Because that's what our devotees were in the beginning days. They were bed sheets. We couldn't bring shirts and stuff from India. Okay. So the next one, the next D of discommunication is called demands. That means when we ask someone to do something, and there is an implied threat that if you don't do it, you won't get prasadam. And if you don't do that, you don't get to go to India this year. Of course, if you are in India, that's no problem. Or you don't get to go to the ILS. That's a demand. It's implied. You don't have to say it. Of course, when we were young, we got demands from our parents. The demand was you have to get A's in all your subject matters. And if you don't do that, guess what? Either a spanking when I was young, or you're not my son anymore. Pretty heavy, isn't it? And if I got A's, I got money. That's nice, isn't it? No, it's not nice. Because if you get paid, if you do something because of reward or punishment, you're like a dog. That's how they train dogs. Sit up, you get a bone. Roll over, Rover, you get a bone. Or if the dog doesn't do something proper, you hit him with a stick. That's how they train animals. I don't think we want to be trained like an animal. We want to do things because we do them from our hearts. And if you do things because you're threatened or rewarded for it, that's what you're going to be thinking of, the reward or the threat. Because when I was told by my mother, you get an A and you get so many dollars, I wasn't thinking studying is so fun. I was thinking money is fun. So we don't want, for example, let's say someone doesn't come on time to Mangal Arati. We don't want to punish them by taking away the prasadam or making them write Hare Krishna 10 million times until their hand hurts. We want to talk to them about why they didn't go to Mangal Arati. It takes more time to be empathic. It's easy to be a boss. We're not teaching here a system of management. Not a system of management, although this is the best management. We're not teaching how to manipulate people. Like the one-minute manager. Anyone's heard of the one-minute manager before? That means first you say, you're a very good devotee. Oh, I really appreciate you. And then after that you say, but that mistake you made was horrible. You put the whole temple in danger. You know, nonsense, creep, you know. And then, after that, it's a sandwich. After that you say, but you're a nice guy, I really love you. That is highly manipulative. We don't want to manipulate devotees. Because when people get manipulated, their need for autonomy, which is, we spoke about before, is not fulfilled, and even if they give in to you, they become like a little clone. You know what a clone is? Anyone here seen Star Wars? Like the clone army? Like that? You become just like a zombie. There's another nice word. Or just like a robot. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then you're not effective, and then it's not from your heart. I mean, let's say someone is cooking prasadam for me. And I demand, if you don't cook prasadam for me, you're not my disciple anymore. You know, we feel the demands like that sometimes. Then someone will cook prasadam, but they won't be cooking with love. What happens when you don't cook with love? You get sick. It's not only that you offer the food, it's how the food was cooked. You can offer, there's an interesting story I just heard from Gaur Govindamar as I was reading this nice book, where this prostitute gave all of her money after she became a pure devotee, and they started preparing prasadam at the temple with the money, and the brahmanas ate the prasadam, and they got dreams, like lusty dreams. And they were wondering, how is it? It's prasadam. But then Lord Jagannath appeared to them in the dream and said, I can digest that, but you can't. That's a summary of the story. So we have to be careful when we eat. Who is cooking? What is the consciousness? I mean, I don't want to eat food cooked by someone who doesn't want to do it, who feels forced to do it. It's a miserable experience. But if someone does it freely, out of love, that's how we should be requesting. The opposite of a demand is a request. That my dear so-and-so, if you're willing to do this happily, please do it. And if you don't want to do it, that's all right. I'll find another way. I'll cook for myself. No problem. So when you demand something from someone, it creates a block in communication with that person. Or even if you demand something from yourself, I have to do something. For example, many of us think we have to chant 16 rounds a day. Does anyone think like that? You're all mild. We have to chant 16 rounds a day. We make a demand on ourselves instead of thinking, I'm chanting 16 rounds a day because I have a need to connect with Krishna, because it's much more pleasant. Like getting up early in the morning for Mangal Arati. I try to think that I'm getting up early because I want to see the deities. I want to connect with the Lord. I want to make spiritual advance. I want to please my spiritual master. So many different positive reasons. Instead of I have to. If you have to, when you're chanting your japa, your japa beads become like bowling balls. You understand? Hare Krishna, I have to finish this 16 rounds. Like Prabhupada gave the example one time of chanting, and he moved his counter beads down and he said, I finished my rounds, now I can do any damn thing. So that shouldn't be the attitude. I'm chanting. Why are you chanting? What's the need that you're fulfilling? You're doing it voluntarily. You can always choose not to do it, right? We always have choices. 100% of the time, we have choices in life. So let's say I put a gun to your head and say, give me your money. Do you have a choice?
No.
No?
Well, I could refuse, but then bank.
Yeah, that's right. You have a choice to get shot or to give me your money. Easy choice. But still, it's a choice, right? You always have a choice. So that's the need for autonomy again. We need to do things freely, and when we ask people to do things, it should be with that mood. Please, if you're willing, with a happy heart. Devotional service should be executed with a happy heart. All right, the next one is denial. That means we are blaming others or circumstances for our own feelings. I'll give you an example. You made me angry. Can anyone make us angry? No, we choose to be angry. Where does anger come from according to the Gita? It comes because we're contemplating sense objects, jayata vishep kumsam, sangostesha vijayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krota vijayate, because we're contemplating sense. We want something and we don't get it, basically. And we're really lusty and angry after that thing. That's where anger comes from. I'll give you the example. Sometimes I'm in a car with someone and someone else is driving. It's not me. And someone else cuts us off. And the person driving the car gets very angry and says, Maharaj, give me permission to go out and beat this person up. That happens. Or at least the horn. Of course, in India, the horn is on all the time, so that's no different. You can't blow the horn in India because you're angry with someone, because it's always on. In India, you have a button to turn it off. You understand? Rather than on. It's the opposite. So, but in other countries, you express your anger by going like that. So, the person is saying, that other person made me angry. No, you chose to be angry. And you're angry because you had a need for safety or something like that. But they didn't make you angry. And you see this often in domestic situations between husband and wife. The husband will say to the wife, you're making me angry, blaming the other person. But he should take responsibility. It's important to take responsibility for one's own feelings and needs. This is a language, this empathic language is a language of responsibility. And all of our feelings, whether it's anger or happiness or whatever, are coming because of needs that are met or not met. Everything is coming from needs. Our feelings, actions, psychological state, everything is from need. And the next one is deserve. That's very much connected with this demands thing. Because we will tell someone they deserve to be punished, they deserve to be rewarded, or we, out of guilt feelings, we think we deserve to suffer. Okay. So these are the four D's of discommunication. And we went over the whole process before of empathy, and we went over the whole process of basic needs. Okay. We're going to do a demonstration now how you can do self-empathy and empathy for others. Now, I'm going to be doing this demonstration. I will need someone to insult me. Any brave souls out there? Now, you're a God brother. You can insult me. Okay. So there's four things I can do once I'm insulted by someone. It has to be bad insult. Can you do that? Really bad.
I just think you're a, just a big bully. You're always pushing people around and you're puffed up.
Okay. He says, I'm a big bully. I'm always pushing people around and I'm puffed up. And you're going to hell. No. Mad elephant defense. You don't know who you're dealing with. Alright. So we're going to do the serious. That was not serious. So what happens is four seats I've arranged here. One seat is I get angry or blame you. Another one is blame me. Another one is empathy for myself. And another one is empathy for you. Okay. So the first one is blaming you. When I sit here, say what you said again.
You're a big bully and you're always puffed up.
You're so stupid! You don't understand who is an actual devotee of the Supreme Personality of God, an advanced devotee.
See what I mean? You're demonstrating it right now.
You're nonsense!
Well, you
I'm going to report you to the GBC.
You made me do it.
Okay, that's blaming you. Okay, that's the first response. That's definitely non-empathic. Don't imitate that. Unless you happen to be an ISKCON guru, then you can. Then you get away with any damn thing. And people will think it's spiritual. Spiritual anger, you know, spiritual violence, all those things. Yeah, when you get a high position, you can do anything you want. So, all right, so next. All right, say the same thing again. It's over.
I just think you're a big bully. You're always pushing people around and you're puffed up.
Okay, the next seat is blaming me. Yeah, he's right. I'm useless. I'm hopeless. I should just check out, commit suicide, watch TV for the next at least watch the Mahabharata. I'll never amount to anything in life. So that's another way. That's not empathic either. Because I'm not understanding his feelings and needs, and I'm not understanding my feelings and needs. Okay, do it again.
You're a big bully. You're always pushing people around, and you're so puffed up.
Okay. So, first empathic thing is I have to be empathic with myself. I heard him call me a big bully, and I'm always pushing people around. And I'm feeling really tense and anxiety when he says that. Because I have a need for loving relationships. Not with him, of course. But I have a need for loving relationships. I have a need for appreciation. And so when I say that to myself, I'm actually applying empathy to myself. I'm counseling myself. Remember, this is counseling. Empathy is counseling. So I'm counseling myself, not by telling myself how I should feel. That's not counseling. Many times we think, some of you may counsel other devotees, many times we think that counseling means to tell people, you shouldn't feel like that. Feel happy. Don't do that. Here's the solution for all your problems. That's not counseling. Counseling is to facilitate other people understanding their feelings and needs. Not to tell people what to do. That is not counseling. So that applies internally as well as externally. So what I did is I just became aware of my own feelings and needs, and I feel fine after doing that. Some music. And then after doing that, and only after doing that, am I ready to be empathic with him. So if I don't do that first with myself, I can't be empathic with anyone else. If I'm agitated, angry, sad, in pain, how can I be empathic with someone else? It's like Krishna consciousness. If you're not Krishna conscious, how can you give Krishna consciousness to anyone else? If you're not chanting your 16 rounds, if you're not following the principles, if you're not reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then how are you going to give Krishna consciousness out? So how are you going to be empathic unless you're full in yourself? Unless your mind is peaceful. And sometimes that means you got to take a time out. Like, say the same thing again.
You know, you're just a big bully. You're always pushing people around and you're so puffed up.
You're in the habit of saying these things. Same thing all the time. I hope that's not coming from your heart. So
it gets better
each time, yeah. So what I would do, you know, if I was with him in the same room, obviously it wouldn't be sitting down like this. I'd say, you know, give me a little time out. I go and back in here. And I think, you know, I feel sad, I feel depressed, because I have a need for appreciation, I have a need for love. And then after a while, okay, I'm ready to talk to you. So after a while, then I can be empathic with him. And that's the last seed here. And I say, you know, are you feeling a little bit agitated? And because you also have a need for appreciation, and you have a... Yeah, so doesn't that feel good when you say that? Thank you. So that's the process of dealing with anger. When someone says something that stimulates a particular emotion, that is a very effective process. But you have to be empathic with yourself first. So one of the needs, before I take some questions...
Let's see, what time is it now? It's almost 4:30.
So one of the needs that we have, is very important that I touched upon, was the need for appreciation. Oftentimes, we are taught that when you praise someone, you're their enemy. In fact, there's an injunction that he who praises me is my enemy. And that's true. If someone says to me that you are wonderful, you are great, you have lotus feet, then after a while, I learn the yoga posture of raising my feet to my head. Just true. I have a disciple who's very expert. He teaches me that. So I can take advantage of my lotus feet. Or I go to the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the nicest sannyasi of them all. Like that. So praise can really be dangerous, especially if you happen to be a guru in the Hare Krishna movement. You get a book written about yourself every year. Pretty good, isn't it? Every year you get a 500-page book of people telling you how nice you are. Wonderful. And I read that book every night before I go to sleep. Every morning when I wake up. During Bhagavatam class. What that does is it creates an arthas. Because one of the sources of anarthas, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is devotional service itself, the byproducts of bhakti, praise. So praise, in general, is not a good thing. But we have a need for appreciation. Appreciation means going over this particular chart to say exactly what someone did, how you feel about it, and what needs were fulfilled. For example, let's say I go to a class in the morning and someone tells some story about Radha and Krishna or Govardhan, which I happen to like. They tell the Govardhan pastime. And I say, Maharaj, when you told that pastime about Giri Govardhan, I felt my heart was jumping out of my chest. I was completely ecstatic because I love Govardhan. That's my need right there. And so when you give appreciation to someone like that, it increases their desire to serve more. When you specifically say what they did, what they said, how they acted, then how you feel about it, and you actually say the need, you connect it to the need. It's a very sweet thing. And we should be doing that with each other. We should be appreciating each other in terms of specific things. General praise, dangerous. You're great, you're wonderful, this, that. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, sometimes I give a seminar and someone says, you are wonderful, Maharaj. And I say, but what do I do? And they said, well, then they get more specific, then I have to drill them down, this, this, that, and finally they tell me what I did and what need was fulfilled. Final point before we take questions, that if you want to find out a need, what your needs are, specific needs, which we all have the same needs, then think about what you want, and I'm going to demonstrate this, and ask why afterwards. And he might take 100 whys. For example, who here has a desire? What do you want? A new iPhone? What would you like? I'm wish fulfilling desire tree cup of Riksha. What do you want? Anything you want.
Waiting for the evening
prasad. Oh, he wants to eat. Okay. He's waiting for the evening prasad. Why?
Because yesterday that need was not fulfilled.
Ah. And why? And you keep asking why. Because you have a need. Ultimately, if I keep asking someone why, then they'll come out with their basic need. Because I'm hungry, I have a need for food. I want food. So it's like that with any desire you have. See, desires are not needs. Remember that. We have unlimited desires. You may want an iPhone, you may want a new computer, you may want... What else would someone want? You can see where my mind is at. So, you may want a car. These are not needs. They fulfill needs. Does anyone here need money? No. Money is a strategy to fulfill a need. You need money because you need food, you need shelter, you need whatever you need. You'll facilitate your service to Krishna. Money is not a need. We all always think, money, 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 I need money. You don't need money. You need to facilitate a particular need. Money may be a strategy, but differentiate. It's important to differentiate needs from strategies, or else we'll get in trouble. For example, I gave that in the beginning of this discussion, we have a need for love. There are many strategies you can employ. I could give my friend here a hug. Or I could give my iPhone a hug. Or I could get a dog. Which probably wouldn't be appropriate for traveling sannyasi. Unless it's a chihuahua. You know what chihuahua is? A little dog that I can carry in my feet back. So needs are different from strategies which are desires. Try it to understand. Anytime we have a desire, try to connect it to the need. Fine. And let's take some questions because we're going to have to end in about 5-10 minutes. You have some questions here? Questions? Yes. The needs can be fulfilled in all cases, but you have to figure out the strategy. That's up to you. I can't tell you how to fulfill that particular need. Is that a need? Is that a need? That's a desire. Your desire is to pull that person down, make him suffer. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we take great pleasure in seeing others suffer in this world. And there's a type of justice that's called retributive justice. I don't want to get too technical about that. When people get happy when they see others killed in the electric chair, you know, capital punishment like that. What? Yeah. Like McGrath, yeah. They take happiness and say, that's not a need. So what is the need behind wanting to see someone suffer? Perhaps it's the need for justice. But it's not a need. If we concentrate on people's basic needs, we won't have any enemies. You know how Vaishnava is a jata shatruva? Means he who has no enemies? Because we will see that everybody at all times is fulfilling needs, but the strategies may be bad. There's some demon. Let's take Ravana, for example. Everybody knows who Ravana is?
Yes.
Okay, you're all devotees. What were his needs? What?
Lust.
No, lust is not a need. He perhaps had a need for security, for appreciation, and he was expressed, of course it's the Lord's pastimes, I understand that, but let's take him as a character apart from the pastimes. He had certain basic needs that weren't being fulfilled, and his strategies were horrible. He kidnapped Mother Sita Devi, he fought with Lord Ram, horrible strategies, but he, even when you see a demon, he has needs. Well, that's, we shouldn't see people's demons, obviously. But you see someone who's acting demoniacally, he or she has needs, but their strategy is horrible. Needs are always good. Remember that. Needs for food, needs for love, needs for autonomy, needs for social interaction, any of these basic needs are good. And everyone here has all those needs. They may be in different degree with different people. Obviously, we see the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were sometimes eating a pat of butter every 2 or 3 days. I can't do that. I need to rest more than that. I can't rest just a half an hour a day. It's not that. Can anyone here rest a half an hour a day and function? I don't think so. So they're expressed differently, but everybody has these basic 7 categories of needs. You can categorize the needs differently. I'm not fixed on this specific categorization, but everybody has needs. You got the need thing? And if you're not fulfilling those needs, you're not going to be happy. Yeah. That's good. How old is your daughter?
Well,
that's very good. So, dealing with children, even when they're younger, there's a stage with children. I'm going to explain it in terms of children. She asked why. How can she deal with her daughter who has a need for autonomy, a very strong need for autonomy? We should rejoice to see people expressing their needs. I mean, appropriately, obviously. For example, in raising children, there's a stage called the terrible twos. Anyone heard of that before? Terrible twos. So when a child becomes 2 years old, generally, they start to figure out they're a different entity from their parents. It takes about 2 years. And then they start to act in ways the parents will think are rebellious. And the parents think this is very bad. But actually, the child is expressing their need for autonomy, the need to be a separate individual. Hiranya Kashyapu, what? Yeah.
Different training.
Yeah, Prahlad Maharaj also is expressing need for spirituality and everything like that. So, people are expressing these needs. We should appreciate and understand the needs. If you reflect dealing with children, like I said, we have a seminar. There's one whole part of it, 2 days, just dealing with children. And if any of you are interested, you can communicate with me. There'll be information in the flash drive you're going to get, which has all the seminar information that everybody's been giving here. My email address will be there, as well as some of the PowerPoints that I used to use. I don't use PowerPoints now because they're not good with empathy courses. It's better just to be connected with everybody. So, if we recognize that need and reflect it, that's part of empathy, that, oh yes, you want to make your own decisions in life now, right? Then that will not be so expressed in a way that is not appropriate anymore. Because you help people understand the other needs. Yes, she has a need for autonomy, but she also has a need for interdependence, a need for relationship with you. If you understand this language and you take your time with children, or take your time with devotees, let's make this more general. I think many of you are leaders in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Oftentimes, we don't take time with devotees who are working with us. Notice I'm not saying under us. Or working with us. We don't take the time to understand their needs. We just want to tell them, do this. I'm your authority. I'm your guru. I'm the president of the temple. And you have to do this because that's the demand again. Go back to the other chart. All these different things are interrelated, and that's what I'm demonstrating right now. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, just look at that. That you have to do this because I am your authority. And we don't want to take the time. It takes a lot of time to be empathic. You have to spend hours and hours with each person. You have to spend hours and hours with your daughter or son or child like that. Trying to understand their needs. Bringing the other person into the decision-making process. That's why Prabhupada wanted an istogosti in every temple every week. Do all of you have istogostis in your temples? Anyone? 1, 2, 3, 4. Good. A few people. But Prabhupada said every week there should be an istogosti. Doesn't mean that I sit up there as the temple president and say, I'm the leader. You shut up. It's not the mushroom philosophy. You know what the mushroom philosophy is? Keep them in the dark and feed them stool.
Hope they grow.
Mushrooms are good, but we're not mushrooms. So real leadership means you do an istogosti, you meet with the devotees, what are your needs, you meet individually. That's a leader. You spend most of your time talking to the devotees rather than bossing them around. And guess what? They'll be much more enthusiastic in the long run. They'll be very happy because their need for understanding, love, communication, autonomy are all being met in the interactions. And that's one reason why we lose a lot of devotees. Because we have this system of authority, and we also have this system of diagnosis, where we deal with people not as people, but as just, you know, labels. So this is also good for management, for all of you who are leaders. Take the time. It's a lot harder, believe me, to be a mother, father, leader, guru. You have to take the time, and you have to like doing it. You can't just say, oh no, I got to talk to this creep again. You really have to like people. If you don't like people, don't become a mother or father or guru or whatever. You can go to the Himalayas. You just chant Hare Krishna. And then eventually, after many lifetimes, you'll begin to like people again. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanupashati sarvaputesha chatmanam tatona vikigupshate. One who sees everyone connected with Krishna loves everyone. He doesn't have any enemies. That's our philosophy. Very important. So a leader should love the devotees and express that love and be ready to spend quality time with all the devotees. Most important. Okay, any other questions? We're going to have to end in a second. Yeah.
Counseling is to facilitate others, and I forgot.
Counseling means to facilitate others in understanding their own needs and feelings. Not to tell others, not to solve their problems. If you end up solving their problems, then you will be blamed when their problems are not solved. It's like what I learned when I first started arranging marriages for people. Don't do it. You know, people come and say, Guru Maharaj, can you find me the perfect boy or perfect girl? And then I look at my database, like Microsoft Access database, perfect. 6 feet tall, IQ 170. Okay, and I said, here's a perfect boy, put him together. I even do the marriage ceremony, right? But you know, here's one of my cases right there. But I did the marriage ceremony and said, oh, what a wonder this, your marriage is made in heaven. But then they find out the marriage is made somewhere else. And then guess who gets blamed? It's your fault, Guru Dev. You gotta find me someone better now. We don't want to be in the business of telling people what to do with their lives. We can advise. So if someone, it's facilitating. Let's say if someone comes to me and says, what should I do with my spiritual life? I would ask them, what is your goal? What is your need? Where do you want to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now? At the end of your life. And generally people will say, if they're in the Krishna conscious movement, I want to be Krishna conscious. Okay, here's the strategy. Chant 16 rounds. Follow rain. If you want to do that. If you don't want to be Krishna conscious, here's another strategy. Go to the bar. Right? Drink liquor. Go to the bar. You know, whatever. So there's a strategy for everything, but people have to connect that strategy with their needs. Just one more question, then I think we have to go to the...
Can you elaborate on the mark? How
about more about the demands? Demands, I'll just reiterate what I said before. Demands means there's either an explicit or implicit threat or reward connected with what the person says. Explicit means, I tell you, if you don't do this, you're going to get a spanking or whatever. Implicit means that I'm going to get, that you know something's going to happen to you even though I don't say it. I'm going to be angry with you. I'm going to be angry. I'm not going to talk to you for 2 weeks. It's all expressed in body language. Like if you say, let's say someone is cooking for me, and I say, get me dinner now. Now! Jaldi karo! And that's an implicit demand. That if you don't do it, I'll get angry. If you don't do it, something will happen to you. And if you do it, something good will happen to you. So that's what a demand basically is. The opposite of a demand is what we call a request. You can even write that word, request. That's what we want to do. We request people. Would you be willing to help me do this? Would you be willing to cook? Would you be willing to whatever? I mean, I can think of a million things. Would you be willing to go to Bhagavatam class? Would you be willing to give Bhagavatam class? Does that explain it? Difference between demand and request. Request is something very sweet. And even if you don't do it, I still like you. It doesn't change my relationship with you. Only if you can do it willingly, happily, joyfully, then please do it. Otherwise, don't. Any other questions? Yeah.
As we go into some Bhagavatam episodes, they're very explicitly, very clearly, the superior is coming and actually telling that you are wrong here and this is the solution. You just the way the Manu is coming and telling to the Dhruva Maharaj that this kind of anger what you are expressing, it is over anger. After that, he may appreciate the Dhruva Maharaj for being from such a kind of lineage and telling that you are responsible being from such lineage and giving a solution for that. So, where the solution comes, question for, is that we have to just expect that they should read Prabhupada's book and find out the solution on their own?
No, we can suggest different solutions. I mean, definitely we could suggest it, but at the same time, we don't want to, you can't force people. Like Krishna in the Gita, he tells Arjuna at the end what? Does anyone know the Bhagavad Gita? Anyone read that Gita? That's a book, a very interesting book at the conversation. What does Krishna tell Arjuna?
Do what you will.
Yeah, do what you want. Now that you've heard it, make your own choice up. He doesn't say, I'm your friend, don't hurt me. I'll kill you. If you don't do this, you're going to be swallowed by the universal form like the rest of those creeps. He says, and now I've explained to you, he explains the results of acting in different ways. The whole Bhagavad Gita is a discussion of acting in different ways or thinking in different ways under different modes of nature and the results of those actions or thoughts under different modes of nature. And then Arjuna is given the choice at the end. Of course, Arjuna, as a devotee, a pure devotee, he says, I'll do it. So we can explain the different results of different courses of action. And we can facilitate people, but ultimately they make a choice. I mean, Narada Muni was very expert. And when he was preaching to King Prachinibhari, what did he do? He told him a story, right? What was that story? The Puranjana story. He said, once upon a time, king, there was a king. And he went, and obviously he couldn't tell him directly because sometimes it's hard to tell someone they're in Maya, right? You're in Maya. You're really attached. Instead, you just say, my dear Brahmachari, once upon a time I knew another Brahmachari. he was just like you. And he did this. So that's a way to counsel people so they don't feel threatened. Yeah. Yeah.
Krishna, please tell. So that's also maybe a different. If you say only, you have to do like this.
Yeah, yeah. Then you can ask, what do you suggest? What should I do? But it's a request and it's not a force thing. Yeah.
But I find that this example
is somewhat inappropriate
because it's a pastime. Right? It's a pastime. He was supposed to act as a demon to fulfill the Lord's need to have a good fight. Yeah. Ravana, it's not an appropriate example because Ravana was supposed, that he was supposed to be a demon because he was one of the two giant Vijay who was cursed by the four Kumaras so the Lord could enjoy. The Lord has a need for enjoyment and he wants to have a good fight sometimes. And so that was the reason.
Yeah. To be fulfilled, then it is a need. If the desire and the need are disconnected, then it cannot be a need. So,
I didn't say the desire and need are disconnected. I said everything, all needs are connected to, I mean all feelings are connected to needs. That's what I said. We're always connected. Anything you feel, any action you make is connected to need. Obviously, Ravana example is not an appropriate example because that was the Lord's pastime. He was doing this to fulfill the desire of the Lord to have a good fight. That is Ravana. But let's take an ordinary, what we would call demon, you know, some political figure like that. And then it's more appropriate. Thank you. Okay, we have to end because we have the final section of the ILS in the main tent right now, and we don't want to be late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.